In 2023, I think to say that the education system in the United States is under distress would be an unbelievable understatement. Yet every year, colleges and universities are graduating energetic young teachers that are ready to take these challenges head on. And Liz Hunteman is no exception. Elizabeth is a proud 2022 SUNY Cortland alumni who studied early childhood education, which gave her a degree to teach birth through sixth grade students. She's now going on her second year of being a special ed pre-K teacher, where she teaches 3 to 5 year olds while balancing 12 IEPs at the same time. Not only is she teaching, but she's also a full-time student herself, working on her master's in special education at Mercy College. And on top of that, she's balancing all of it while being a mom. Well, a cat mom, that is. I truly enjoyed the conversation that I had with Liz about where education is going, a lot of the struggles that young educators are facing today, and how she hopes to be what she describes as one of the good teachers for all of her students for generations to come. I truly hope you guys will enjoy this conversation as much as I did. So 3, 2, 1, let's go. Hey everyone, what's going on? I'm Mike Fancher, and welcome to this episode of the MindFit Method Podcast. So Elizabeth, I am so excited to have you here today. Thank you so much for joining us. You're at a great point in life. You're right at that point where you've completed your bachelor's degree. You have a direction you want to go. You're doing your graduate program now, and it's in the world of education, which is honestly something that is just, you know, it's so important, not only in the kids' lives, in parents' lives, and honestly in the lives of our future as a country, as a world, as a human race. It's so important. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
My pleasure. For all the listeners out there, Elizabeth and I actually share the same alma mater. She graduated SUNY Cortland in 2022. So we graduated a little bit apart. I was in 1999, so we have a little bit of an age difference there.
But, only a little bit.
Only a little. I have such fond memories of Cortland. I'm sure you do too. Especially as my son is going to be a sophomore there this year as well. So it's very exciting. But tell me, because you have quite a background in education all the way from the time that you were a child, but can you share with us kind of your journey and what inspired you to pursue a degree and a path in education?
Sure. So I discovered that I really loved just working with kids from a very young age, actually. I remember in the first grade, working with my mom, because my mom is a teacher. I come from a family of teachers. My mom is a teacher. She just recently retired from pre-K of 33 years. I have an aunt who recently retired, who did fifth grade, well, fluctuated through grades, but retired doing fifth grade, also 33 years. I have an aunt who does special ed in the seventh and eighth grade realm. So I really come from a big family of teachers. And I have a grandmother who worked as a secretary, cousins who are secretaries in schools. They're all in schools. So I really, everybody, went to school, but I really grew up in a school, even outside of school hours, before and after school hours. And I remember in the first grade, I helped my mom out because she did pre-K and she works in a predominantly Black area. So she did the song from The Wiz called Ease On Down the Road. And the kids were singing it and they were marching along to it. And I remember just helping her and remembering the song and helping her out, trying to teach these kids as if they weren't only like 2 years younger than me. And I absolutely loved it. I loved it. And, at the age of 7, I thought, oh, this is what we do as a teacher. We teach kids songs from musicals. And maybe this is why I love musicals now. But I thought, this is exactly what I have to do as a teacher, is teach these kids these songs. And then obviously growing up, you realize that's not exactly what happens when you're a teacher. You can't just teach kids songs. But as I grew older, I realized what great teachers looked like. I realized what bad teachers looked like just from my own experiences of going through the grades. And I realized, I've had my fair share in great teachers, but I've also had my fair share in not so great teachers. And I knew that I so desperately wanted to be one of those great teachers that everybody remembered and did not want to be one of those that people did not want at all. I wanted to be the teacher that everybody recommended or like tried to get in my classroom. I pushed and pushed and I knew that I wanted to be a teacher. And then what really sold it for me that this was my path was I had a UPK in my high school where there were 12 four-year-olds that came in for like 2.5, 3 hours, 3 days a week. And you can only take the class as a junior and your senior. It was a big privilege to take this class. And I got in as a junior, as an assistant. All juniors are assistants. And I, you know, helped cut out some stuff. I helped like pull up bulletin boards, just like borders. And I helped out the seniors who were the teachers of the room. And I was like, okay, I cannot wait to be a teacher. This assistant thing is fun, but like, I need to be a teacher. And then senior year, I became a teacher where I had to make my own lessons from hand, nothing from the books, nothing from teachers, paid teachers, from hand, had to be approved by my host teacher, Miss Gonzalez. had to make bulletin boards, had to write lesson plans. Yes, they were simplified lesson plans. They were lesson plans. And I loved it. Even the lesson plans, which was the least favorite part of that whole experience, it was still not a bad part of the experience. I loved every part of it. I loved teaching these kids and I loved seeing them learn from what I'm teaching them, whether it was, you know, just simple letters and numbers or science was always my favorite subject. So experiments made them lose their minds because they loved it and I loved seeing them love it. So my host teacher came up to me and said, do you realize like how much you shine by doing this path? Like, taking this path. And I, you know, I knew I loved it, but when other people see it in you more than you see it in yourself, you know, you kind of have to, like, you don't have another option. That's kind of where you have to do. You kind of have to do that. So I pushed forward and I said, I guess this is my direction in life. And that was in 2018. It's now 2023 and I'm going on year two of teaching.
That's amazing. Now, there's two things that you said that really stuck out at me. One of them is that pretty much in first grade, you knew exactly what you wanted to do. And gosh, when I was in first grade, I still think I wanted to be Indiana Jones. And, you know, it's so amazing that, you know, so many people, they change their major so many times while they're in college, they change their direction. And it's so inspiring to have someone to be able to talk to someone who you knew all the way back at that age, even in first grade, this is what I want to do. And even as you learned more, as time went on, you still realized, yep, it's not exactly what I thought it was. Now you add this, now you add this, now you add this, and it's still what I want to do. That definitely rung out at me. But the other thing was that, you know, you realize just as in any other profession, there's good employees, there's bad employees, there's good teachers, there's bad teachers. Someone once said to me that you only remember two teachers as you grow up in life. You remember those who were amazing and those who were really bad. So really that means there's three types of teachers. There's the amazing, the bad, but then there's everyone else that wasn't memorable. And you instantly pointed out, you understand the difference and you want to be a great teacher. And that's just so inspiring because that's what's going to help lead our children into the future to be successful contributors to society.
You made a good point of like knowing from when I was in first grade. I know people my age currently. I have a friend who's completely struggling with knowing what he wants to do. And he's like, I'm jealous of you. I know, like, the fact that you knew what you wanted to do and now you're doing it is insane. And I mean, I'm only 23 and like I still have my whole life ahead of me. And so does he. But, you know, I know this is my career path. And to think that, you know, I could be stuck where I don't know what I'm doing scares me. Like, the fact that I'm solid and I know what I'm doing is, I never thought of it as such a privilege, but it is. It Absolutely. Is such a privilege.
That's amazing. You know, I can imagine. Now, you're currently in grad school now
as well? I am.
Awesome. I can imagine that balancing graduate studies, your teaching commitments can be very challenging. How do you manage your time effectively and really like try to maintain productivity in all of your roles? Because obviously you have more than just one.
Yeah. So I am currently a special ed teacher for 3 to 5 year olds. And my graduate degree is in special ed. I got my undergrad from Cortland in early childhood and childhood, so birth through six. And the special ed is also going to be birth through six. It is definitely a challenge. I thought undergrad school, where you had to take 5 classes a semester and paper after paper and homework after homework, was going to be the challenge of the degree. And graduate school is going to be so much easier. And now I get to grad school where I'm only doing 2 classes, which you wouldn't think would be as challenging, but God, you're exhausted at the end of the day. And then you have to tag on grad school, which it's, again, it's only 2 classes, but it's 2 classes that if you didn't have grad school, you wouldn't have to do it. And I didn't have a 8 to 3:30 before my undergrad. And now I'm in my grad and I have an 8 to 3:30 job and, you know, a 45-minute commute, which adds that time of you can't do your paper or you can't do your homework. And my social life struggles. Definitely struggles right now. My closest friends are my one from high school and then all my coworkers, because those are the only ones who understand the time commitment or lack thereof that I have. So thankfully, I've had a lot of shoulders to lean on with that. And, you know, there's just some days where you want to go out. Again, I'm only 23. I want to still go out to bars. I want to still go out and, you know, hang out on the weekends. But there is some times where you just have to say, I'm going to skip this weekend. Or, you know, maybe I'll show up at like midnight if I'm up for it. And then there's some days where you're like, I'm going to go to bed at 9 o'clock. And that is totally fine. So it's time management has changed completely from undergrad to grad school, and special ed has a lot of paperwork. So balancing that has been a juggling act, but somehow, some way, a successful juggling act. But it's been a juggling act for sure.
I think even as you were talking back to how you knew back when you were in first grade what you wanted to do, you seem to have a very distinct time horizon. And those that can look that far into the future and know that the work that I'm putting in now isn't exactly making me the most social person or allowing me to do the things that I want to do, but in a world of instant gratification, you're actually delaying gratification to being able to get through your degree, to do the things that you want to do, knowing that there is going to come a time in the future when your master's degree is now done and you're able to do what you want to do and have the life that you want. As you said, you're only 23. So it's very impressive because you've already had the long time horizon, but you also seem to be very willing to deal with that delayed gratification of time and success and be able to wait until you get really what you want. And that's it's commendable. It's very impressive. Thank you. Very cool. As a student of education, you know, what strategies have you found effective in enhancing focus and really retention while studying complex topics, especially in the world of special education?
So one thing that I have always had a strong passion for is music. So for me, and I know this does not work for everybody, having music on a specific like set list of just repetition during, you know, studying those kinds of topics actually gets me to focus, because especially the songs that I know, because I don't focus on the songs, I focus on the content. But also, especially during my grad school work, the great thing about doing grad school and teaching special ed at the exact same time is that they can relate to one another big time. There is stuff in my textbooks that I'm like, oh, that child does that. That's why that child does that. That makes a lot of sense. This is how I can help this child. Sensory regulation is a big one that I learned so much about over the past year. And it's like, oh, that child spins in circles, not because they want to just interrupt my class, but because they need that in order to regulate themselves and not lose their minds. Let them spin in circles if it's not distracting anyone else. You know, if I didn't learn that, I would have thought they just wanted to distract me. And, you know, doing both at the same time has been such a big help, because of that. And it's small things like the assessments I have to do and IEPs and learning IEPs and learning the goals and what they relate to all relate a lot in the textbook, which is great. But also I discovered that not everything is textbook either. So the textbook helps, but not all that you want it to do all the time, because you can't teach from a textbook. But there are some content from the textbook that most definitely helps.
Absolutely. I remember for many, many years, I coached T-ball and baseball. And, you know, in T-ball, it's a little less fast paced. You're able to manage, even though the kids are very little, you're able to manage them a little better. I remember having a player that he was very, very tactile. And I would notice when he would go out in the field, he was constantly ripping grass out. So you're wanting to stay attention, you know, to stay focused. You don't want them to get hit by the ball, even when they're out on the field. And I remember watching him, what he would do with the grass. And it was his own coping mechanism to be able to stay focused, but he would actually take the ripped grass and put it into his glove. And it was the tactile movement that then kept him focused. So my initial reaction of, no, don't do that. That's, you know, you're not focusing on what we have to do. Actually, that was exactly what he needed to do to focus. And once I realized it, I realized, you know what? Let him have his mitt full of grass. If anything else, it's just adding padding to the mitt anyway. And it worked incredibly well. So I remember being able to use those tactics. You're right. It's not always about the textbook. It's what you're experiencing and what you're seeing. And, you know, movement for me, especially, I've spent about 15 years researching the effect of exercise on learning in kids. And when a child moves, exercises, or, you know, begins to increase their heart rate, there are actually neurochemicals and neurofactors that are released in the brain. And some of them are things like dopamine and norepinephrine that helps balance their mood. Another one that is fascinating is called BDNF. It's brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And if you take synapses of a brain and you put it in a petri dish and you actually sprinkle BDNF on it, and this is a naturally occurring neurofactor in your brain, you literally watch the synapses grow. And they actually dilate in size and they increase in length. It's like pouring fertilizer on your brain synapses just from exercise. So when you're talking about spinning before, it's amazing that those effects and what those things can do and the effects that they have on a child, especially to prime their brain for learning. So yeah. Very fascinating. In today's world, we live in a technological digital world today, and there's been rapid enhancements in technology. How do you see the integration of digital tools and online learning shaping the future of education? And is it all benefits? Is it a lot of drawbacks? Is it a unique combination of both?
It is most definitely a unique combination of both. I know a lot of teachers that are so anti-technology, and although I get it, I don't 100% agree with it. I think technology in the right form and the right amount of time and without it being abused can be an absolute great thing. Going back to the special ed thing, there is an AAC, if you know what an AAC is. If not, I'll explain for everyone.
Go
else.
For it. For the listeners.
An AAC basically allows a student who is unable to communicate verbally to be able to communicate by clicking on like an iPad that has words or letters or icons. So if they need water, they can click on the water instead of, you know, not being able to tell me because they can't. So they can spell things if they're able to. Again, my kids are too young to spell, so they'll click like go if they want to go somewhere, or bathroom if they have to use the bathroom, etc. That is a perfect example of how technology is perfect. Without that, how can my kids who can't communicate with me communicate their needs? They can perfectly just pull their iPad out whenever, pull it out and click on whatever they need, and then it'll happen. You know, that's their way of communicating. It might not be perfect, but it works for them, and therefore it works. Things like throwing on an iPad or a TV all day, there are detrimental effects. And I have the kids now that were born in the time of COVID and you know, the COVID either happened the year they were born, or they were one, or they were two when COVID happened. And what do you do during COVID? You watch a lot of TV, you watch a lot of iPad, you can't go anywhere. You were stuck for a year. So a lot of parents shove their kids in faces of iPads and TVs, and God, you can see it. I mean, my kids might be special ed, but they and lack communication skills to begin with, and then add on technology 24/7. They can't communicate. They are extremely self-centered, which they are at that age. Add on special ed, add on COVID times. And it's crazy how something like a TV can really like change their moods. I do not use technology a lot, other than like the AAC devices, which are essential to some kids. But I have a TV in my room where I can communicate it through my computer and throw on a video if I need to. Transitioning from one activity to another, sometimes it's essential because they refuse to clean up, or they refuse to go to a special, or they refuse to go to like clean up for lunch or whatever it might be. Throw on a video, all of a sudden they sit there quiet and you don't hear a peep. It's a big thing that, you know, parents throw in their faces. And it could be such a big thing. Like, I know there's like ABC Mouse for the little kids. I know there's, you know, different websites and stuff like that that can really benefit. But I think kids are so used to getting an iPad and getting a reward or some sort out of it. Personally wish I could do something along those lines with the technology that I have, but I really don't. And therefore, I limit my technology minus AACs because I refuse to have them not communicate more. They need to communicate.
And what's interesting is that the next thing I really wanted to talk about was the impact of the pandemic, and you already covered it completely. I think we're in a world today that unfortunately is dominated in so many ways by technology, from the time that we wake up in the morning to the time that we go to bed at night. I would often have parents really express their concerns to me about their children, because when they wake up in the morning, the first thing they do is either jump on an Xbox, a PlayStation, or an iPad. And they do that literally until the time that they get on the bus. And as soon as they get on the bus, they then go on their phones. So even at a young age, they have smartphones. And during all this time in the morning, the technology releases dopamine in your brain in an almost identical way to things such as alcohol, drugs, even sex. To give you an example, just a piece of chocolate increases your dopamine in your brain by 50%. And if you smoke, it increases it about 150%. If you have sex, it increases about 150%. If you do cocaine, it increases 250%. And if you do meth, it increases 1,000%. So there is a wide range of how it increases it. But what's amazing is that using a smartphone or technology or video game in any way actually increases your dopamine levels very similar to that of smoking, gambling, and drinking, all of which are things that are regulated by laws, age restrictions, government. And yet it's not just the fact that it spikes our dopamine as much as it does. It's the constant abundance of dopamine and a constant access to it, because they're using it all day long. For someone, even for an avid smoker, they're not smoking, you know, 18 out of 24 hours in a day. Yet our kids today are utilizing technology nearly that long. It's incredible. And there's definitely, I think we're going to see more and more studies coming out in future years as to the impact that technology is having on our kids. And even to the point now where many doctors are saying a lot of the root causes of ADD and ADHD may actually be technology, which is scary because as a parent, you're not sure what to do. So it's a scary thing. Here's an interesting question for you, because this is something that I'm seeing it in the news more and more often. I think it's something that we as a society have taken for granted for so long, but teacher retention today has become a huge concern in school districts. It is becoming more and more difficult for schools to find qualified teachers. And when we first started this conversation, we talked about good teachers and bad teachers and those that you don't even remember. What we didn't talk about were teachers that are barely even qualified
to be able to teach. And because the school districts are so strapped, they're changing their requirements for teaching in general and who they will hire as teachers. So much burnout that has gone on because of the pandemic, how teachers in many ways are being vilified today for the problems in school districts. And, you know, it, which is certainly quite unfair. It's not, you know, the saying it takes a village is more true now than ever. But what's interesting is that we're actually separating ourselves and siloing ourselves and saying the parents are over here, the teachers are over here, the administrators are over here. What strategies do you think educational institutions really need to start implementing to start supporting and retaining teachers effectively?
I feel like the very obvious answer that like every teacher can say and think, and I think we're all thinking and saying, is treat teachers better and pay us more. I feel like that's the very simple answer. Not that I think it's going to be the cure-all, but we are vilified and I don't get it. I mean, most of us are only out there wanting the absolute best for your child and want to teach your child the best of our abilities. Nobody is perfect and a teacher will mess up every now and then. Not saying that a big mess up isn't a big mess up, but I feel like our little mess ups are blown up to be 10 times bigger than what they might be. And I feel like the simple answer of, you know, supporting your teachers more, a lot of staff, I see it in my own school, staff support parents 10 times more than they support their own staff. I have higher ups that, you know, if the parent says one thing and the teacher says the other, the parent is the right one. Even if they're not, they're right. It's one of those like the customer is always right type situations. And from a teacher's standpoint, it sucks. From a parent's standpoint, I can understand. I guess I can understand. Not that I'm a parent, but you're obviously the most concerned about your child. But so are we. And I feel like being able to just support staff more, knowing that you can be there for your staff, I feel like will change so many things. I don't know. I just feel like so many administrators, they just want to please parents. And, you know, you can't always please parents, but you're going to lose teachers by just trying to please parents. And I feel like that's why we're so short-staffed on teachers, is because my generation is over it. You know, the older generation would stick it out, stick it out, stick it out, which I appreciate. But I feel like my generation and the millennials are just tired of it. And they're like, we have other options. We can go do other things, and we're going to go do other things. And now we're screwed. There's a teacher shortage. It was great to get a job quickly because of the teacher shortage, but otherwise it sucks. You know, yeah. Ultimately it just sucks.
Completely understand. And, you know, I've never been a teacher. I have sat on a board of education for many years. And I can tell you, as a parent and as a board member, one of the things that I found most frustrating was that in some cases, the teachers take the blame for poor leadership from administrative teams. Sometimes administrative teams are so threatened by the community, by the parents themselves, they make the decisions that they really shouldn't be making. And I remember sitting on a board and I was told early on in my board tenure that every single decision you make, you should be able to tie back to a single question. How is this going to impact student performance in a good way or in a bad way? And it's not just about curriculum. It's not just about hiring this additional director of whatever. I mean, it goes right down to if we have the correct custodian, team in the building and the rooms are clean and the hallways are clean, what is that environment that the kids then get to learn in? It goes all the way down from all levels. And what amazed me more than anything was that the parents could be very, very loud in a board meeting and the administration could be very, very secretive in a board meeting and the board would be stuck in the middle. And you can't speak your mind. I remember even as board president saying so many times, I would love to tell you what I really want to say right now. And I would say this in a public meeting, but I can't say it because I'm not allowed to. Based upon the laws and the ethics things and all the things going on in the board, it was the most frustrating thing. And I think if we can start improving communication between administrators, teachers, parents, and students, for students to just give a little bit of input to, while they might not have the big pictures to what's going on, they do have the little picture of the environment, the microcosm of what they learn in every day. And that, I feel like that communication has broken down so much. You know, you can't fix a school district by parents creating a private Facebook group where all they do is rip apart every teacher, every administrator, every board member, whatever it is. That is actually segregating communication. It's not bringing it together. So I agree with you. I really hope it's something that all those involved in a school district, and that certainly includes the parents, really consider it going forward.
I couldn't agree more. And going back, you mentioned curriculums. So many parents complain about curriculum. And as a student, you know, you're like, this curriculum sucks. Teachers half the time hate it too. I didn't discover that until I got my own curriculum. I'm like, oh, wow, this is not a good curriculum. And I can tell you five more that are better, but we're stuck with this one. And, you know, a lot of people complain. I remember in high school, you know, we were learning about like algebra 2, trigonometry, stuff that I never use today. But we never were learned about like, I still don't know how to do my taxes. I hand it off to my mother and I'm like, here you go, you know. But I'm sure now that I look at that, like I think back and I'm out of high school and I'm a teacher now, they are probably thinking the same thing, these teachers. Why aren't we teaching these kids stuff about like taxes and stuff that we aren't like is necessary for life? Why are we teaching this stuff that only 2% of people that graduate from here are going to use? But they can't control it either. So they can think all these things. They can, you know, internalize all these things. But ultimately, it doesn't matter. Yep. You know, now they have to keep teaching the same stuff that only 2% of the people are going to care about.
It's interesting. There's a quiet push right now that's starting to gain a little traction on changing what the benchmark math is for college, because forever it's been calculus. Mm-hmm. And yet 0.7% of the population use calculus in any form whatsoever. And of that 0.7%, 90% of them are teachers that teach calculus. So it's a very interesting number. And there is a push now to actually remove calculus as the benchmark math for colleges and instead make it statistics. Because statistics allow people to absorb data and then be able to make informed decisions based upon the data that they get, instead of calculus, where again, 99 point whatever percent of people don't use it. So it's going to be interesting to see if we start actually tailoring our education system more to the actual needs of our students to be great contributors to society, to be able to be successful, be set up to be successful in so many ways, because what every study is showing today is that so much of what is taught in school is not going to be used. While people will focus on, oh, well, it's ridiculous that they don't write in cursive, or they don't know how to sign their name, or they don't know how to, that is true, but there are other things that are just as important that I think we're missing today. And I'm with you 100%. So I have final two questions for you. I ask this in all of the podcast interviewees that I have. So bear with me for a moment, because I always love to understand people's mindsets and where they're coming from. But throughout your experiences, have there been any specific books, podcasts, resources that have significantly impacted your personal growth, your personal mindset? And if so, would you share them with the audience?
So, yeah. So there is this very amazing poem that my mother showed me, because, again, she worked in a lower income school. And I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's called Because I Ain't Got a Pencil.
I have not.
Okay. So I am going to Google it and I'm going to read it, because this is an amazing poem. That it really proves, like, you know, the little things can build up so much, and you have no idea what a student is going through at home. You know, you have no idea. And a student might be having a rough day, but you have no idea what they just came from and you have no idea what they're going home to.
This is exciting. I'm so excited for this.
I love this poem. I've read it so many times and I reread it every single time. I think this is so important. Okay. So this is called "Cause I Ain't Got a Pencil" by Joshua T. Dickerson. I woke myself up because we ain't got an alarm clock. Dug in the dirty clothes basket because ain't nobody washed my uniform. Brushed my hair and teeth in the dark because the lights ain't on. Even got my baby sister ready because my mama wasn't home. Got us both to school on time to eat us a good breakfast. Then when I got to class, the teacher fussed because I ain't got a pencil.
That is incredible. You know, we always try to remember, even if wherever we are, whether we're in a supermarket, whether we're in a store somewhere and someone bumps into you and they throw you some attitude, I always try to put myself in their shoes and say, I have no idea how heavy the weight of baggage is on their shoulders that is invisible. I have no idea. And you literally just gave me goosebumps because that is the world we live in today. And there's so much, today's world, there's so much division. There's so much hatred. We live in a world today where, you know, two people who may not have the exact same views can't seem to have a conversation without one thinking that the other hates them and back and forth. And we often forget that we are all humans that carry some sort of baggage with us. And that is a beautiful poem. And I sincerely appreciate that you shared that because that is amazing.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed a lot with special ed, just in the 1 year being in the special ed field, there are unfortunately a lot of parents who are splitting and divorcing because they don't know how to parent in this day and age with a special ed child. I have one child and I love him to absolute death. He is very emotionally disturbed, but I think a lot of it is because he is going through this traumatic experience of a divorced parents, and his parents go back and forth and his parents, you know, struggle with communication between themselves. And, you know, this child can't fully communicate his expressions without like crying or throwing himself on the floor, but you can tell he's hurt. You could tell he's so hurt. And my child that I had in September versus my child that I have right now, where we started and they were together and now we're in August and they are very much separated, are two very different children, unfortunately. One was sit down during circle time, listen, happy coming in, happy going home, never got upset, until this one where you have to like really try hard to make him happy because he's just naturally that brought down. And you know, it sucks because you know where he's coming from and you know what he has to go home to. But, you know, for those 5-6 hours that he's with me, you try to do the absolute best you can to make him just feel safe and comforted. And the amount of hugs this child gets compared to everyone else is, you can't compare because this one gets 10 times more just because he needs it, you know?
Right.
And you know, that poem, I think about that poem often with him because it's like, you don't, you know, you might get mad that he's like throwing himself on the floor and he's like trying to act out, but he just wants to feel comforted a lot of the time.
Right.
And sometimes all he needs is that hug to be like, oh, okay, I'm safe. I'm good. You know,
that's amazing. That is amazing. You have actually really inspired me to realize how many young teachers like yourself that are just entering your careers will set a trajectory for kids of all types, whether, you know, everyone always thinks of special education as those that require additional assistance. I always think people forget that gifted and talented is another world that also needs special assistance, perhaps in a different way. But, and in the end, all children are little humans and Absolutely. They need to be able to flourish and dream, be inspired, fight for their goals that they're going to want someday. Maybe there's a lot of kids out there that in first grade know they want to be a teacher, and you want to be able to nourish that, nurture that. that. And maybe there's a lot of kids that want to be Indiana Jones too, and we can try to nurture that as well. You never know. Otherwise, they wind up as a podcast host. So one final question for you, if I may. What message or mantra do you live by that you would like to share with our listeners as a source of inspiration?
Oh my gosh. Don't judge a book by its cover, I feel like is a big one, especially in the field that I'm in. And like we just mentioned, you never know what somebody is going through. So take everything lightly. And until you learn somebody's full story, you know, don't jump to conclusions, because jumping to conclusions will hurt you at the end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everyone, I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast today. Elizabeth Hunterman, you have been a fantastic guest. I have feel like I've learned so much from you today, and am absolutely inspired by this trajectory of young teachers like yourself that are not only educating yourself in your grad degree, but are also educating our future. So I can't thank you more. I can't thank you enough for being on the show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Hey, you guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the MyFit Method podcast and my conversation with Elizabeth. Don't forget, the MyFit Method podcast is doubling the number of episodes we're putting out per week. I hope you guys are as excited as I am. So stay driven, and until next time.